Welcome to another That's a Dive. I'm Kyle Martino, which should surprise nobody. You know me. You know the pod. Welcome back. Thanks for listening. Couple housekeeping items before we get the pod started. New man on the mic today. No pun intended. Producer Mike.
Jorge is off. I don't know.
Maybe I don't know what Jorge's doing.
I think he's doing Pilates.
But here's the thing. There are two men behind That's a Dive. Producer Mike and producer Jorge. We have PJ. We got PM today. They're here to babysit me, and they do a fantastic job. Another thing, we're going to bring back the whistle. We got to bring back the whistle. The whistle, it's for those listening for the first time, for those listening again, it's just here to try and contain me because I'm remarkably tangential, and I go off into different worlds that a whistle brings me back from. And also because I miss playing the game so much that I put these little things in to make me feel like I'm still playing. A whistle. I make my wife carry around a red card and a yellow card. I wear my cleats to bed. I have a therapist. He's working on it.
Are you going to yell at me looking for a whistle when you think you've been fouled?
Yeah. I might do that. All right. And deal with it better than PJ does because he books me a lot on this podcast. Also, there's all these podcasts out there under the NBC umbrella you got to listen to. One that's great, Roto World Football Podcast. It's hosted by Josh Norris. No relation to Chuck. Takes a deep dive like we do, but into NFL, something I know nothing about. So don't listen to this for NFL. Listen to Josh Norris and Roto World. They got the draft coming up. He's going to talk all things draft. So if that's your thing, check that out. Three topics today, PM. We're going to go into the magical Mr. Messi. Magical Mr. Messi. That's a mouthful. The magic of the FA Cup. Is it still magical? And then first we're going to get into fixing the PFA Awards. PFA Awards, the Professional Football Association, towards the end of the year, comes up with their awards, and N'Golo Kanté got Player of the Year. That's the big award. And first, let's just talk about N'Golo Kanté getting that award, PM. And I love it. It was what I had predicted a few months ago before we even got close to the business end of the season. I thought he deserved it last year. What was interesting is the Leicester Team Awards, the players gave the team player of the year to N'Golo Kanté, but PFA player of the year was Mahrez, which kind of gives you an insight into one of the issues about the player of the year, which is, one, it comes too early.
But yeah. I mean, why we're not even into May?
It's, I mean, so much is getting ready to happen, and also down the stretch is when you really see what a player is capable of and how important they are. I mean, whether it be relegation, survival, whether it be winning a title, why do they announce this thing so early?
It makes no sense to me. Let's just lay out a situation here where Chelsea drop points in the next couple of games.
Yeah, and N'Golo Kanté's terrible.
Even if he's not terrible, let's say he's just not the dominant force that he's been all season long. Okay. And Dele Alli scores 5 goals and assists 4 for Harry Kane. He's not even on the short list. That's your player of the year.
So that actually highlights another problem that we'll get into about the PFA Young Player of the Year. But you're absolutely right. I think when you get to drilling down into awards, It's got to be after. I mean, I understand you don't want to do it after the season because these guys jet off. You want everyone to show up. It's a big gala. You want everyone looking nice, smiling for pictures. You want it to be a big publicity event. So yeah, I get that you have to do it before the last game of the season. But I mean, can't you delay this a little bit and make it more representative of the entire body of work during the season? To your point, what if someone goes on an absolute tear right now and was on the short list? I mean, his teammate, Eden Hazard, who many think should win the PFA Player of the Year. Yeah, he scores a massive goal the other day in the FA Cup. You know, down the stretch, if he is the sole sort of driving force behind Chelsea going back and winning a title and fending off Spurs, or, to your point, if Spurs make this miraculous comeback and end up lifting the title, and it's because of Harry Kane scoring a dozen goals down the stretch, I mean, that changes who wins the Player of the Year.
Without a doubt. There must be some other machination. Is that the right word for it, Kyle?
I have no idea what that means. Don't use big words on this podcast.
Going on, that's preventing these awards from being announced later in the year. It's a mystery to me, but it's confusing, and it sort of makes, it doesn't make the award a joke because it's, you know, if you look at the company that these players are sharing in this award. It's incredible.
Yeah, we don't want to minimize and belittle the award. The award's incredible, and typically it does go to a consensus of. And here's how they vote for it. They pass out the ballots team by team. Do the guys that played against him week in and week out think that that's the hardest guy to play against? So that he's one of the best players in the league. I just think, come on, let's do this a little bit later. Let's make it be more representative of the whole season. And then the other one that we were talking about when you brought up Dele Alli is there's the young player of the year. So the criteria for that is that you have to be, what, 23 or younger?
Yeah.
I mean, kids, there's 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds playing in Premier League. But that's a huge range of guys that can qualify for young player of the year, which isn't the big problem. The big problem is, 22, 23, I mean, you're not really a young player in the game anymore. I mean, these are guys that Dele Alli is one of the best players in the league. You know, Gareth Bale, when he won Player of the Year, PFA Young Player of the Year, he won Player of the Year at the same time. And now Dele Alli's won Young Player of the Year 2 years in a row. It's like, come on, you come up with a different criteria for what constitutes the young player. And also don't make it take away from Dele Alli as a I feel like because he's nominated for Young Player of the Year, it hurt his chances a little bit to get on the short list for Player of the Year, because he should be on the short list for Player of the Year.
He absolutely should have. And it's so odd that he's named Young Player of the Year. He beats Lukaku and Harry Kane, who are also nominated for that award. But those two players are nominated for Player of the Year.
He's not nominated for Player. That's a conundrum.
It makes no sense at all.
Or paradox.
They just haven't. The award is odd, and they haven't adjusted it to the modern game. The modern game is young footballers are playing at a younger and younger age. They're peaking younger.
And also, I feel like if you win it, you can't win it again. You know, because, I mean, the whole idea, it's kind of like a Rookie of the Year award. Like, if you win it, you can't be up for it again, you know? I mean, we're trying to identify, and the point of these awards is to identify the talent that that's exceptional, but in a different category, because the player of the year is just exceptional performance, like the Ballon d'Or. I mean, you could win it five times in a row if you're the best player in the league, if you're the best player in the world. But young player of the year, it just needs to be an exciting reward for someone fresh, someone new. So it could be newcomer of the year. Find a criteria where that can be it, whether it be, you know, you have a certain amount of Premier League appearances. Under that certain amount, you qualify for being considered for that award or whatever it is. The other thing is, what about defenders? You know, what about defender of the year?
They get no
love.
What
about goalkeeper of the year? What about, they have team of the year.
They have the team of the year, but I'm looking back at the last winners for PFA, player of the year right now. The last defender was John Terry, 2004-05, who was massive that year. But there hasn't been a defender since then. And Conte is the only defensive midfielder in this group in the Premier League era.
Yeah, and I mean, these Conte, I think the reason he didn't win last year is because Mahrez was a remarkable spectacle, a magical show that was so easy to see the beauty he brought to the game. It's hard to recognize what's so incredible about N'Golo Conte. Yeah. But in terms of influence, and if your idea of player of the year is does he make this team better than any other individual makes their team better, N'Golo Kanté qualifies for that.
Absolutely.
You know, because as far as Eden Hazard, you know, you could put Harry Kane, you could put Dele Alli, you could put Sadio Mane with how Liverpool fall apart when he's not out there. You could put other guys up against Eden Hazard, but in terms of this guy basically was the reason Leicester won a title. I mean, you can really drill it down to if they didn't have him, I mean, they'd be struggling big time.
There's no way that Mahrez has that space on the wing that he can hang up that way. It's just
he actually his beauty, N'Golo Kanté, and the fact that Mahrez was up for it and Eden Hazard's up for it this year but didn't win it is one of the reasons those guys were up for that award is because of N'Golo Kanté. I mean, they wouldn't, as you said, have the freedom and be the creative influence and as efficient, of course, individual talent and skill. I mean, those guys are incredible. So that's our rant about the player of the year. I don't know if it just makes it seem a little Mickey Mouse that it comes out at this point, and then everyone's sitting there saying, okay, well, now down the stretch, the PFA player of the year had nothing to do in the run-in for winning a title or right. or
the last month of the year just is X'd out from the award category. It's just consideration. It's just very odd.
You know, and what about, you know, let's chuck in American of the Year. Yeah.
What if we actually wanted to have American of the Year? That'd be tough picking, slim picking.
It'd be a short list. It'd be a very, very, everyone would qualify.
The short list would be the list.
Just by participating in the Premier League, you're on the short list for American of the Year. I mean, I know it's kind of silly, but N'Golo Kanté, let's spend the last minute or so of this topic just giving love to N'Golo Kanté, because there was a role that was titled after someone who performed at a level N'Golo Kanté is slowly creeping towards, the Makélélé role. I mean, Makélélé made what N'Golo Kanté is doing famous. And
without a doubt.
And since Makélélé, there kind of hasn't been someone in the Premier League that you look at and just say, build a team around this guy. Because no one notices the guy doing the dirty work. And the guy is just incredible, which goes to, I think it was Steve Walsh, right? I mean, he was the scout that with Leicester that went to find this guy. You know, everyone's searching for, everyone looking at, you know, Griezmann and Lewandowski and Aubameyang and
Mahrez,
all these stars are on the list of, and will cost you about £100 million every scout and every team to try to improve their side for next season. Go to the French second division. Find you right. An N'Golo Kanté.
Oh, I thought that's what you were hitting at. Like, Mahrez is another player who came out of
obscurity. Well, yeah, that was pretty remarkable. But easier to identify a Mahrez than it is a Kanté.
Without a doubt.
Watch this.
You're in under.
Boom.
Wow.
See? I mean, PM, you keep me in line a little more than PJ does. PJ just makes me anxious and rambly.
I'm a disciplinarian.
Yeah, you are. Authoritarian. Okay, next topic. We're kind of complaining a lot in this podcast, I'm realizing, because we're going to complain about the FA Cup right now.
Well, we're going to complain and give it some love, because those games this weekend were pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, as far as FA Cup semifinals go, I mean,
I don't remember
to have those
one.
four teams left: Manchester City, Arsenal, Chelsea, Spurs. Yeah, I mean, the last time, Bex threw out this stat on the show. The last time number one and number two in the Premier League faced off in an FA Cup semifinal was. I messed it up. That's why Bex throws the show and I'm not. This is only the second time since World War II, number one and number two in the Premier League faced off in an FA Cup semifinal.
That's remarkable.
I mean, let that blow your mind for a little bit.
I wonder who went back and counted all those games.
And the last time it was Manchester United-Chelsea, maybe? I don't know. No one's going to look that up. So, yeah, it was Manchester United-Chelsea.
And it was in the 90s, right? I think is what she said.
So, FA Cup. Is the FA Cup magic gone? Yeah, it is. It is in a big way. For the first time in a couple decades, it's not even sponsored. And the big problem is teams not putting out their A side for FA Cup. Now, as it gets close to winning it, you know, teams tend to put out their best 11. You know, you could point out that Eden Hazard and Diego Costa didn't start for Chelsea, and maybe that was an example of Chelsea prioritizing the Premier League, and maybe it was. And, you know, that's a big issue, that if you're not taking, you're at Wembley and you're not taking an FA Cup semifinal seriously. I mean, that's a massive issue. But really, it kind of goes deeper than that. It's the fact that with all the money in the game now, and with what it means to stay in the Premier League, win the Premier League, get in the top four, I mean, we're hundreds of millions of pounds versus winning the FA Cup, which gets you about £2 million. I mean, you get £2 million in the Premier League for your position. So if you finish eighth instead of ninth, you just made yourself £2 million. Right. Pounds. So the financial incentive isn't there for the FA Cup. I mean, it's just and call me you know,
jaded
and unromantic.
Susan?
Yeah, you could. You could call me unromantic, but that's the reality, is that the financial incentives of the Premier League has minimized the interest in the FA Cup. So that's one big issue. And the other is the prestige of the FA Cup. So you can conflate those two, because they are kind of linked, is that the prestige is minimized because of the financial incentives outside. So maybe one easy solution is you know, 20, 30 million pounds for winning the FA Cup. I mean, does that move the needle for some of these clubs? Maybe it does.
I think it will. Money talks in this league. It always has.
I think that's one way, but maybe not a realistic way, especially without a sponsor.
Right.
I mean, maybe you work on getting a sponsor that fronts that cash and then try to build up the tournament, kind of like the FedEx Cup. I mean, they've made that a huge thing in golf because the purse is so enormous. But the prestige, it used to be about, you know, David and Goliath. It used to be about these little guys beating the big dogs. And the problem is the scheduling, the third round coming, you know, around January, where it's the busiest schedule for the Premier League.
Yeah.
It's just a nuisance to Premier League clubs to try and field teams when it's the most difficult, most cluttered part of their schedule.
It's usually the second week in January. You're coming off of that horrendous holiday fixture congestion.
The last thing you want to do is try and put together a side who are exhausted, who have all these nagging injuries, into FA Cup to play the little guys. So what the FA Cup, what used to be great about the FA Cup is when the little guys beat the big guys. That was something special and something rare because the big dogs took the FA Cup seriously. Right. Now, not only does it happen more frequently, these massive upsets, but it happens against you know, the kind of kids, the B team for you know, Chelsea, Manchester City, Liverpool. So when it happens more frequently, it doesn't really resonate as much. And then when it does happen, people just say, you know, that wasn't Manchester United, that wasn't Chelsea, that wasn't Arsenal, that wasn't Liverpool. I mean, it was a bunch of kids with you know, numbers on the back of their jerseys in the 40s and 50s. So that ends up kind of ruining it. And so the other thing is, it's not just the big clubs that aren't taking it seriously. It's the teams in the Premier League that are avoiding relegation. I mean, just to survive in the Premier League has now been a priority over being in the FA Cup and making it far and going to win that historic trophy. So they got to fix this thing. And let's talk about maybe some of the solutions outside of, you know, a huge purse for winning it. What's the problem? The problem is big clubs and clubs fighting relegation in Premier League don't take it seriously. But also teams fighting in the championship for promotion don't really take it seriously at a certain point. So
right, because it's like you said, there's a business decision here and it has to be made.
What's promotion, the carrot?
Yeah.
What's the carrot? Yeah, so kind of like the Europa League, right? Another trophy that people didn't take seriously. And now the FA Cup trophy obviously was taken very, very seriously at one point, and now isn't. The Europa League was never taken seriously.
Right.
So now, because it has Champions League tied to it, a ability to qualify for Champions League the following season by winning that competition, now Jose Mourinho is saying it's a priority to win the Europa League. Come on, it wasn't before winning Champions League qualification was linked to it. So maybe you make it, this will be the least likely, but you make it Champions League qualification.
So then we lose a spot, the top four.
Yeah.
Fourth place doesn't get it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's one possibility, least likely.
Right.
So that doesn't happen. The next thing you could do, and this is also very unlikely, is it's immunity. It keeps you from getting relegated.
That's interesting. I like that. I haven't heard that before.
So it keeps you from getting relegated. So now the team that just was safe, In the table, you know, team finishing, 17th, they get relegated.
So that year, Wigan won it under Roberto Martinez.
Yeah, so you stay up. And I can't remember who finished 17th that year, but I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
you're down. Yeah.
And also, that makes the run-in, that makes the relegation fight more interesting because then there's this, are we safe?
That's a very good point.
Okay, so that's one possibility. Maybe you make it a promotion. You can make it also promotion. If you're in the championship, And you win the FA Cup, you win yourself promotion. That one not as interesting because I feel like, you know, championship sides, it's less likely they make it into you know, FA Cup finals. They do, of course, they do. But you know, I don't think people are as concerned about them not taking it seriously as much as they're concerned about Premier League teams not taking the FA Cup seriously. So yeah, I mean the fact of the matter is, this is a beautiful old tournament that's amazing. And when managers treat it with respect, it's incredible. Mm. It's so much fun. Also, another thing to get rid of, which reminds me, replays. Replays are ridiculous.
Replays are brutal.
Get rid of the replays. I understand a lot of the things I'm talking about help out the smaller clubs. The other thing they need to do is get rid of the League Cup. I mean, there's too many domestic competitions. I know I sound like a Scrooge because it helps out the little guys, and this makes me look like I'm prioritizing the Premier League and the big clubs. But if you do these things, you can revive the magic of the FA Cup. Because all of these, you know, the myriad of reasons that it's lost its luster is solvable, but you know, it's kind of a zero-sum game. By solving these things, you create issues in other areas. And it's just, you know, if you really want the FA Cup to mean something again, if you want sponsors to be fighting over each other to throw their brand on it and to make it this big march to Wembley, instead of it being, you know, a trophy that saves Arsene Wenger's job season after season.
That's a good segue. I was just going to ask you that. So you've addressed sort of these big picture issues impacting the cup. Let's talk about the results this weekend, one in particular. Arsenal winning.
Yeah.
We don't need to get into the VAR discussion. I think you've covered that. We all know that
Aguero... We need it!
That Aguero goal should have stood.
That goal should have stood. Another example of watching a video for 2 seconds and getting the right call.
Yeah.
Okay,
but Arsenal, third FA Cup final in 4 years.
Yeah.
He's won two of those three. If he wins three FA Cups in 4 years, does this save his job?
Yeah, I mean, it probably will, but it shouldn't. It probably will, but it shouldn't. I just wonder, Arsenal Tad Potters out there, hit me in the reviews or hit me at Kyle Martino and tell me if you're okay with, if you've been upset and you think it's time to move on from Arsene, if he wins the FA Cup, is that okay? You know, is that good enough a consolation? Like top four has been a good enough consolation prize for Arsenal fans over the years? I think absolutely not. I think winning it will again paper over a lot of cracks and perpetuate an issue that needs to be solved eventually. It's not going anywhere. Death and taxes and Arsene Wenger not winning a title. I mean, it's just, I just wonder too, Arsene Wenger, one of the reasons he always wins the FA Cup is he prioritizes it at a certain point because they're so good at finishing top four, but so bad at winning titles. They can put their focus on winning that.
Under the buzzer.
I'm on fire.
You are
today.
On fire.
I'm on absolute fire today. PJ's job is in jeopardy. So, last one, going on from there not being magic in the FA Cup. Well, there's too much magic to measure in this Messi guy. PM, sometimes I just feel sorry for myself and I bemoan that we were born in a different era, that we missed Cruyff, that we missed, you know, we're at the tail end of Maradona. You know, we missed some George Best. Some of these guys that I idolized, that when I was little, we didn't have YouTube back then. You and I, us old fogies.
Little VHS machines.
Yeah, I burned those cassettes up. I burned those VHS. Remember, sometimes you'd have to take it out and kind of like a tape cassette. I mean, we sound like we're 90 years old, but I'd have to like clean it and reel it back because I would watch those things until they wore out. And I had this amazing Maradona video called Hand of God. I had this Eric Cantona video, King Eric. I had this Cruyff video called Dutch Masters. I mean, those were my heroes growing up. And I would just feel sorry for myself that I didn't grow up in 60s, 70s, 80s to see some of these remarkable players in the flesh, in their prime. But are we seeing someone better than those guys? Are we seeing the best soccer player to ever play the game? Is the question, Tad Potters. And honestly, I the sample size for me is small, as I just said. I didn't see Cruyff live. I didn't see Maradona live. I cried, though, when he got tossed from the World Cup
in
94. That goal he scored against Greece. He was back. Maradona was back in a big way. Little Kyle Martino, with his little tiny legs and his big hair, started crying when Diego Maradona got tossed from that tournament.
I think that's reason enough to cry.
Yeah, I mean, that was tragic. So, sample size is small. We haven't seen a lot of those guys live. But we've seen enough, and we read enough, we hear enough. But this Messi is also doing it in the modern game,
right,
where the modern game is a more difficult game than the one played in the past.
The sample size for Messi's excellence is huge. It's humongous.
And the consistency throughout his entire career is absolutely insane. He scored his 500th goal in El Clasico the other day. If you missed the El Clasico, go back and watch it. Pirate it if you have to. Just don't say I told you to. Find a way to watch that game because this guy, it's not just what he does because he's an alien. The things he does on the field, the manipulation of the ball, the way he embarrasses players, the way he always seems to pick the right pass, the right moment to do the right thing. It's like it made the rest of us feel like we were playing a different game. And listen, I got to play against some incredible players. I got to play against Cristiano Ronaldo. I got to play against Ronaldinho. This guy's different. This guy has something different, and I don't think it's ever been at this level before of just dominance, in a way that was so beautiful, that was so artistic, that deserves to be celebrated. And in the El Clasico the other day, it's like, you know, the game's 2-2. It's a massive game, title implications. The pressure is as high as it can possibly be. Who's going to come up big? Messi's going to do it. Of course he's going to do it. His 500th goal in all competitions for Barcelona. I mean, he did 73 goals for them all competitions a few seasons ago. I mean, this guy is a freak of nature, and I honestly think the best guy to ever play the game.
I'm not going to disagree with you, but I am going to ask you some questions against his case.
Do it. Drill me.
He has trouble performing with the national team. Is that a fair statement, or is that
no?
Unfair?
This whole, like, you have to win a World Cup to be considered the best thing is ridiculous. Because, by the way, if he was playing in Pele's Brazil or Diego Maradona's Argentina when they won, when was the last time
86.
They won? Mexico?
Yeah, 86.
Come on. I mean, those teams are much better than the Argentina he's playing for.
Okay.
And also, the other teams have caught up. I mean, you know, some of the other nations that are dominant now, I don't feel like we're as dominant in the eras that Brazil won or Argentina won. I mean, if you're the best player in the world and you just happen to be born in a country that's not filled with remarkable players, I mean, this is something we daydream about all day long and we debate when will we have our Messi. But let's just say somehow Messi was born in America, born in the USA, and never won a World Cup. Does that disqualify him for being the best player to ever play the game? No.
I buy that argument.
I think it's a joke. I mean, it was the same thing they said about LeBron James. LeBron James, you know, he's never going to compare to Michael Jordan, although Michael Jordan, many will argue, was a better player, forget the titles. But it was like, wait until he wins a title, and then we'll talk about him being the best player ever. I mean, that qualifier for me, I just don't think makes sense. I mean, look at it in a completely objective way. And watch individual performance and just isolate that in a vacuum. Forget titles and forget all of this stuff that people tend to conflate with greatness. This guy plays the game in a way that I don't know if we're going to see again in a long time. I just don't know if we're ever going to see someone in our lifetime dominate the way he dominates. I mean, just entertain the way he entertains, because there's a lot of players that are good at entertaining.
Mm. His teammate Neymar, one particular.
Neymar is one of the best entertainers in the world.
I love watching him. The way he dribbles, nobody else dribbles like him.
But Neymar isn't close to one of the best players to ever play the game.
No.
So it's just the confluence of so many different qualities that decision making, athletic ability, just artistic ability, craft, goal scoring. I mean, just if you were to sit here and play weird science, you know, and put underwear on your head and create the best player you could imagine, and compiled, you know, Socrates with Diego Maradona, with Cruyff, with Best, with Brian Robson, with, I mean, you just put together this remarkable list of everything you could compile about what you love, Van Basten and all these guys. I mean, you basically be creating Messi.
Yeah. Do you think, let me ask you a question. As a fan of Messi, which I think it's clear that you're a big fan of Messi.
Yeah, if you're not a fan of Messi,
you don't like the sport.
Yeah, stop listening right now, because we're not going to get along.
Do you want to see him move on from Barcelona?
No, I don't. I don't. You know, some people want to see him come do it in the Premier League, and that's another sort of that's another stick used to beat down the people in that camp would call hyperbole about him being the best ever, is they want to see him do it in the Premier League, where arguably his style might not be as effective there. I mean, in a simple experiment and curiosity wise, of course I'd love to see that. I mean, it'd be great to see if he went to play for Pep at Manchester City, if they could play Pep's way, Barcelona's way, and you know they could recreate what was special at the Nou Camp. But I, you know, in the going back to the FA Cup conversation, the romance is dead. I mean, in the game, because of these remarkable salaries these guys make, because of managers leaving after 2 years, the short-term reality of the modern game and the egregious salaries guys make, and these super agents that are saying dumbass things and they think that they're stars now, we've fallen out of love a little bit with that nostalgic past, what was so beautiful of the game, the loyalty and all that. Messi is it. I mean, he's one of the last guys left that would be a one club guy.
Yeah.
And the fact that the best player in the world is not for sale, I mean, that idea, I love that. I mean, that's just such a romantic idea. And I want to see him finish at Barcelona. I don't want to see him kick a ball ever again for any other team, and walk out in his last game in front of that incredible stadium. If you haven't been to it, book a trip to Barcelona. There's a museum attached to the Nou Camp that's remarkable. It gets millions of people a year, even in the off season when there's no chance of seeing the team play. In that cathedral of excellence, I want to watch Messi walk out, kind of like he did when he scored the third against Real Madrid the other day, when he took his jersey off. And I want him to take his jersey off, lay it
down in the
circle,
yeah,
right on the spot in the midfield line, face up with it saying Messi number 10, and just walk away and go back to whatever planet he's from, because that guy is not human.
One
at the buzzer? Okay, buzzer question.
I'm going to ask you a question as the buzzer comes in, so we're going to get the
overtime.
Yeah.
Extra time. Here.
As Messi ages, if you remember his first goal from this weekend, he slalomed through the Manchester. Oh, there's the buzzer.
Okay, we're going through. Powering through.
Slalomed through the Manchester, or excuse me, the Real Madrid defense, vintage Messi.
Mm-hmm. How long does vintage Messi keep going?
How long can he do that? And yeah, is he the type of player that can reinvent himself? You know, Ryan Giggs was never at Messi's level, but he was a speed winger, very straightforward running.
Yeah.
He reinvented himself as more as a holding midfielder, was able to maintain possession better. Can Messi do that?
Good question. Yes, he can. And Giggs is a good example. Giggs relied on his speed, I think, a little more than Messi does.
Mm-hmm.
And to take nothing away from Ryan Giggs, but the position he played, he was much more of a traditional winger in a much more sort of traditional time. At the end of Giggs' career, he was a playmaker in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a midfielder who didn't have the top gear anymore, who still was class. I mean, he's still outside of the left foot, you know, picking passes, picking teams apart. We saw him reinvent himself and play. If you would have guessed Ryan Giggs in his prime, could he reinvent himself? You might have said no, because his game was so much based on just blistering pace. But of course he had remarkable composure, vision, just a very cerebral player. Messi's that guy too. So if you watch Messi, Messi's not stepovers and all of this, like touching the ball by someone at top speed and getting around the corner. You know, Thierry Henry had a little bit of that about his game, where Thierry was incredible and could reinvent himself. But Thierry Henry at his height, he could just touch a ball down the line and just run by you because he was a freak athlete.
But Messi does have that lateral quickness that nobody else can keep up with.
Yeah, I think that as he loses, which you all do, and I did at like 28, you lose that explosion and you lose that first six steps where you can just run away from people, which is definitely part of Messi's game. I would argue that top gear isn't really Messi's game. You know, he obviously is very, very fast, but you stay explosive in the way he puts people off balance for longer than you stay explosive over 20, 30, 40 yards. But I also just don't think he relies on that much. And as he gets older, what he's going to do is use the part of his game that actually is the most impressive to me, which is how often he picks the right pass, the right angle, the right situation. I mean, he, even at this point in his career, you don't see him take guys on as much as he used to. I mean, he already is kind of picking and choosing his moments to really break down a defense off of the dribble and be the type of guy that can cut through players with the ball. He's bouncing the ball off of guys a lot more than we've seen in the past. So I absolutely think towards the end of his career, kind of like Diego Maradona was that guy towards the end of his career. I mean, a lot of similarities in the way they played the game. You know, he's just going to become a guy that that uses the ball and uses defenders, kind of uses their defenders' movement against them, and kind of simplifies his game a little bit and doesn't open himself up into these big long runs. And it's going to be amazing, and it's going to be fun to watch. But I honestly think Messi will walk away, kind of like Zidane did. We'll walk away when there's still...
when you still want more.
Yeah, when there's still a lot left in the tank where he could give you about two or three more seasons, as Zidane definitely could have. Yeah. I mean, I feel like Zidane could go out right now and still play the way he was playing at the end of his career. But it'll be a sad day when Messi says goodbye, as we're going to do right now. PM, I mean, a great... I feel like your debut... I think you qualify for Young Podcaster of the Year.
Someone told me once I have a voice for silent film, so I'm happy that this went well.
You and Bex, my two favorite people with voices a little bit higher than mine. What we didn't do at the top of the show, but I'm going to do now, is the reviews. You guys, thanks so much for the reviews. They help. I don't know why, but the people that know things about podcasts tell me that they help. So keep throwing the reviews down. I love them. You guys encourage us, and even when you make fun of us, it makes us... just strive to continue to produce decent to average podcasts for you. But here are some reviews that had the movie lines in it. I mean, I'm just a pop culture nut. I love movie references. And here are two of my favorites from the last couple weeks. Double Gnuff said, podcasts are like a box of chocolates, probably. And this particular chocolate is packed full of great soccer insight, self-deprecating humor, and is topped off with a spectacularly flammable haircut. If this chocolate soccer podcast were a race car, it'd be a Ferrari or maybe an Aston Villa. And if you don't get that inside joke, you're new to the pod. So Tad Potters are laughing right now. You need to go back and listen to, I think, podcast two. Kyle, you had me at a low. Keep up the good work. He threw a couple of different movie references in there. And then the last one, Rooster82C, four eps in and I can't get enough. Love the mix between discussing today's soccer world and incorporating it with Martino's playing days, decisions, and lessons from it all. As for the best movies, because I said my best the sports movie, PJ asked me, and I said For Love of the Game. I love that one. He said For Love of the Game is very underrated. That being said, it's not even Kevin Costner's best sports movie. And the movie In-Law, which I think was just a autocorrect, I think he meant mother-in-law, would disapprove of your choice. And Susan's a Tad Potter, so Suze, that was a great movie too. But For Love of the Game is awesome.
It's a good movie.
What was your favorite? What was your favorite sports movie?
I think
Hoosiers or something.
If you want to watch like a classic great sports movie, it is Miracle.
Oh, that's the hockey.
I'm not even a big hockey
Miracle on Ice
guy, but it's just. It hits all the right notes that a sports movie should hit. Underdog, they work hard. It's got that working montage. I love a training montage in a movie.
Goldie Hawn's guy, who starred in that? Wasn't it Kurt Russell?
Kurt Russell was the coach. Yes.
You know what? I haven't seen that.
It's good. It's good. It's great.
I'm going to go back and watch that before the next pod, guys, and I'll give you my review of it's called Miracle.
Miracle, yep.
All right, that's it. That's it for this Tad Pod. Thanks again for listening, guys, and remember, Tad Potters, stay on your feet.